This episode of True Consequences is brought to you by Wagner Spray Tech. Ask anyone who knows me and they will tell you that I am not handy at all. I will hire out anything that requires these skills because I know I will just mess it up. So I just had a wall installed in my backyard and it needed to be painted. I was dreading standing outside all day in the New Mexico summer heat. It sounded like a nightmare to me. Then I discovered the Flexio 3000 paint sprayer from Wagner. This thing is awesome. No more fumbling with messy rollers and brushes, and it does it all. It's designed for painting or staining walls, furniture, cabinets, and more. The best part is, it's 10 times faster than a brush. It can spray paints and stains right from the can. It gives you more control and less mess, and it's great for indoor and outdoor projects. My favorite part about all of this is that it only takes 5 minutes to clean it up. Honestly, you have to try this thing. It's made a believer out of me, and I actually had fun painting. Go to WagnerSprayTech.com, get yourself a Flexio paint sprayer. I'm telling you, it's going to change your life. Use the link in the show notes to get your sprayer today. The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
This is True Consequences, a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico in the American desert Southwest. All right, so welcome everybody to another live stream of True Consequences podcast on Get Vocal. If you're watching on Twitter, if you're watching on Facebook, I know you're probably used to hearing me talk about this. Come over to Get Vocal. It's pretty easy. You can either download the app onto your mobile device or you can come to getvocal.com if you're on a desktop or a laptop computer. You can sign up here and then just search for True Consequences. You can find me. Tonight, I wanted to revisit the Toy Box Killer, which was my first episode ever. But before I do that, I have a couple of things to announce. If you're a True Consequences listener and you're not listening to Dos Pequeños, I would highly encourage you to do that. It's my new show. We're going to have, I believe, 4 episodes coming up on Sunday, all the way done. And released, and we'll be releasing episodes weekly on the same schedule that we did with True Consequences. So myself and my friend Alex are going to be co-hosting that, or we are co-hosting that, and we're covering all the paranormal stuff that happens in New Mexico, which is a lot of fun for me. It's something that I've always been into, and it's a nice break from all the crime stuff. All right, I need to give a shout out to a few people that are recent Patreon subscribers. Okay, so Sonia G, thank you so much for being a Green Chili level subscriber. Michelle M, another subscriber that just joined. Oh, Rebecca W. Rebecca, thank you for being a patron subscriber. I really appreciate you. My son is yelling in the background. I apologize for that. He is again playing Xbox, which is something that I can't seem to get him to understand at this time on a Thursday. I'm going to be recording. Those are my most recent Patreon subscribers. If I missed you, I'm so sorry. Send me a message or a text. I'm trying to keep track of all of that, but I'm obviously doing a terrible job. So the Toy Box Killer. I was hoping that we could get some discussion going, some questions going, have a little bit of an interactive conversation. So hopefully the two people that are here tonight will pipe in with some conversation here. So I'm not just talking to myself. I don't want to just redo the episode that I did for episode 1, but I do want to talk through some of this and hopefully get some conversation going. This was one of the worst cases in New Mexico, and I would probably argue one of the worst cases anywhere just because of the mentality of this person, just because of his predilections towards violence. He was just pure evil based on everything that I've learned about him. And I didn't really want to do this when I first started, but I knew that it was the most famous case that that had ever happened here in this state. And my show's name, True Consequences, after truth or consequences, which is very close to where all of this happened. I couldn't not do it. So I figured, why not just do it right away, get it out of the way. Of course, my style, the way that I approach podcasting, all of that has changed pretty dramatically over the last two seasons. And hopefully you all feel like it's improved, because I've been working very hard to get better at what I do and focus on providing quality content. So I wasn't really proud of that episode, in the sense that I felt like I still had a lot to learn about podcasting and about writing and all those things that I've been doing. George, I got your question. I will answer it in just a second here. So let's give a little bit of background. David Parker Ray was born in Belen, New Mexico on November 6th, 1939. And Belen is about 30 minutes south of Albuquerque. I think it's about 30 miles south of Albuquerque as well. Albuquerque, New Mexico, on I-25. So Belen still sits in the Rio Grande Valley like Albuquerque does. It's got mountains in the east and some mesas and stuff in the west. He was born to two parents, Nettie and Cecil Ray. They were ranchers. They were very poor. Cecil was abusive and an alcoholic. He was very angry. He would often physically abuse his kids along with his wife. And he was just not a very good dad in general. David's parents separated and divorced when he was about 10 years old, and he was sent to live with his grandparents. His grandfather wasn't so much abusive in the way that his father was. He was very controlling. He was very strict, and he was not really known for putting up with a lot. His grandfather, again, wasn't known for being affectionate. David seemed to be pretty traumatized by the behavior of his father and by the way that he was being controlled by his grandfather. He was known to blow things up. He would create homemade explosives. He would blow things up in the woods near his grandparents' home. And he seemed to be pretty focused on those kinds of things, as well as he got older, he started to show an interest in mechanics, but also an interest in bondage and sadomasochism. And some of that interest came from his father, who would periodically pop in and out of David's life as he was growing up. Every time David's father would come around, he would cause chaos. He would start abusing David. He would be heavily drinking. He would bring sadomasochistic pornography to David when David was still a boy. He wasn't really even 17 or 18. He was still pretty young. So he started exposing David to the world of BDSM at a very early age, and probably at an age when he didn't have the mental facilities of an adult. His brain wasn't fully developed yet. So this really affected his development as a young adult. And you can see that as he gets older and starts to show his interests in these types of things, in torture, in abuse, in physical violence towards women. All of this stuff would lead to him becoming the person he was. Now, a lot of people claim that David Parker Ray is a serial killer, and there's a good chance that he really is a serial killer. Unfortunately, he has never really been charged with murder. They found one body associated with him. There were never any other bodies found. The body they found was of a man who used to be his boss. And the only reason they were able to attribute it to him was because they had found the blood of this man in David Parker Ray's RV. But there's a lot of thought, and even the state police believe that he is a serial killer. So even though there's never been any proof of that, none of his victims that he videotaped really were ever found. Their bodies were ever found. Even though they found, hundreds of trophies in his trailer, there were belts, earrings, watches, clothing items belonging to women, unknown women. They never found any proof that he killed these people. I always refer to him as a suspected serial killer and a serial rapist because he's never been charged with murder and they've never really been able to prove or even find out how many people he's killed, which is really shocking. It's also very frustrating, I think, for law enforcement because there's so much evidence that he did harm so many women, but really we only know of a handful of victims. And a lot of that is due to Cynthia Vigil Jaramillo. She is such an incredible, strong woman. And I had the opportunity to interview her. If you haven't listened to it, I believe it's episode 5 of season 1. She goes into really in-depth detail about the case and about what happened to her. And she really didn't hold anything back. It was pretty shocking, but she also just did a tremendous job and her story is incredible. We'll get to some of those details here in a minute. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Welcome.
My co-ghost is here. Hola. Thank you for joining. Oh, looks like we have a friend here. Jackie, friend of the podcast, friend of both podcasts. Thank you for joining. So Cynthia Vigil Jaramillo, her interview was, I think, probably my favorite episode of my show. The only reason any information was found out about David Parker Ray, the only reason he was ever caught was because of her. If it wasn't for her, it's possible that he could have continued offending for years following her abduction. And Cynthia, in her interview, talks about the fact that she was convinced that she was going to be killed. She was convinced that David Parker Ray and Cindy Hendy wanted to murder her. And she told me that the idea was Cindy was going to go to Washington State to visit some family, and they had abducted her specifically for David while she was gone. And the idea was that when Cindy came back, they were going to kill her. She's just such an incredible person. I can't believe how strong she is and how amazing she is to be able to get out of that situation. In her interview with me, she just went into such tremendous detail about everything. And I just feel like so much is owed to her regarding this case, like I said, because without her, none of this information would have come out as soon as it did. He had been offending, according to him and according to his daughter, for 40 years, for four decades. 40 years that he was torturing women, 40 years that he was abducting women. His MO was to find a woman that was either by herself on the street, sex workers. It's just incredible that he wasn't caught in that amount of time. Jackie asked if they ever found any other victims. So the only victims that they know about right now are Cynthia Vigil Jaramillo, Kelly Garrett or Kelly Von Cleve, Angelica Montano, Marie Parker, and there's some speculation about a couple of other women, but nobody else has come forward. There's not a lot known. The FBI has a gallery full of his trophies online. And they've asked the public for information about if they know who those things belong to. So there's like belts and shirts, watches, necklaces, earrings, all those things. So unfortunately, they haven't found any other living or dead victims. One of the things that his daughter, Jessie Ray, said was that if he didn't murder his victims, he would take them to Mexico and sell them into sex slavery. He would traffic them. So I think that's another reason why some of these people have never been found. He also targeted vulnerable women. So he's looking at sex workers. He's looking at drug addicts. He's looking at people that wouldn't necessarily raise suspicion if they disappeared, which is horrible. And it seems to be the MO of many serial killers and serial rapists. You know, they go after people whose families maybe don't really know where they are all the time. And so it makes it less likely that anybody's going to start looking for them. It makes it less likely that anybody is going to care that they're gone. And it makes it easier for them to get away with it. Okay, so my friend asked me, where is Cynthia now? And if she has years of therapy. I don't know about her therapy. I don't know what happened to her there. But she's had a very hard life. She's lost two sons. One was murdered. Another one, I believe, was arrested. And I think he might have died as well. She's had a very difficult life. She did start an organization called Street Safe New Mexico that works with sex trafficking victims as well as sex workers to give them resources, to give them access to food, clothing, things that they may need. She has tried to make the most out of the situation, but she definitely has not had a very easy life. She's had a very difficult life. It's just unbelievable. And she shared with me in the beginning of the interview, this wasn't aired in my episode, but she did share with me that her mother was murdered. And she believes that her mother was murdered by a serial killer. I think that has been corroborated by the FBI. And that's the reason that she found herself on the streets involved in sex work, was because she had lost her mother at a very young age. And so her whole life has been a struggle, and her whole life has been a challenge. The fact that she thought so clearly, I mean, because we know that David Parker Ray would drug his victims. He would give them sodium pentothal. He would give them barbiturates. He would give them things to make them so drugged out of their mind that they wouldn't necessarily remember what happened to them. And that's what happened with Kelly Garrett, Kelly Van Cleef. She was so drugged that whenever he brought her to her husband's parents' house, she had no memory of what happened to her. How do you find the website for the FBI? So I think if you Google David Parker Ray FBI, or if you go to FBI.gov and search David Parker Ray, you should be able to find the little website that they have where they show all the gallery of trophies that he had. Hey, Ariel, welcome. Grab a spot. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. So I was talking kind of about the history and the backstory of David Parker Ray, what happened. And I was leading up to this whole thing of this was my first episode, and not necessarily a fun one to do for your first episode. And I wasn't exactly proud of the quality because it was my first episode, but, right. but I kind of had to do it. It was one of those things. This is the most infamous case in New Mexico. Right. It's probably one of the worst cases in general, I think.
Yeah. It's really terrible. But I will say this, though, your coverage of it was wonderful. And Cynthia Vio being there was, I mean, just like my mind was blown.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Ariel. Mm-hmm. So I talked a little bit about David's history, how his father was an alcoholic, he was abusive, how his parents separated, and then he was living with his grandparents, who were very strict disciplinarians. His father giving him bondage porn when he was like 12 and 13. I know that you're like aware of human development and mental effects of that. How do you think that would affect any, like just a regular person who wasn't being abused already?
Yeah, abuse definitely does add another dimension. But when you think about somebody's sexual awakening in light of pathological kinds of situations, I mean, for instance, you look at somebody like Gary Ridgway, whose mother was bathing him, genitals and all, into his teen years. I mean, gonna mess with them with some things. And so even though he wasn't abused physically, right, he didn't suffer that, he still had this very odd sort of dysfunctional pathological relationship with his mom into, again, his sexual awakening. And there's, he was conflicted about that. He's been conflicted about that his entire life, talking about how he hated his mother. And that was the first thing he ever really wanted to kill, was his mother. You know, and so we look at things like David Parker Ray and coming up in this household of brutality and violence. And then, you know, taking that from the level of like, this is this horrific thing, and moving it up to that level of like sexualizing it, you know, you can see how that would kind of, you'd sort of trend towards like, okay, I'm going to start. And the term is identifying with your abuser. Right. And he would sort of feel like an affinity, I guess, with his abuser, and start to think of like, okay, this is arousing, like causing people pain, does something for me sexually. I mean, so a normal person, it's going to fuck you up. I mean, it would, you know, it's not necessarily going to take you to that level, but somebody who's already experienced that, obviously, I mean, we see how.
I just imagine that it somehow short circuited his development, you know, especially his sexual development, because you can see later on that he just becomes obsessed with this. Like, this is the thing that drives him in his life into his like elder years.
Right.
It's the only thing that really matters to him, so much so that he spends $100,000 on creating a torture chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even understand spending $5,000 on something.
No. I mean, you know, and his was so elaborate. You know, I mean, this sounds just terrible, so please excuse me, everyone. But I have an 8-year-old daughter. And so when she was little, that was in like the age of the Neverland Fairies movies with like Tinkerbell and all her buddies. And he was like a Tinker Fairy, except that he would just make like horrible, ingenious, but horrible torture devices.
Yeah.
You just kind of hope or wish, I guess, that he could have used that intellect and that ability, that gift, with something that wasn't hurting people.
And he did do some of that. You know, he was very skilled at building things and engineering things and creating things. Jackie asked where his mom was in all this. So his mom, when his parents separated, neither of them wanted anything to do with the kids, which is why they sent them to be with their grandparents. His mom started dating men and just living her life away from him. She wasn't very maternalistic. I mean, even if you go through a divorce, it's hard to imagine his kid. I mean, David was 10. I think his sister was probably a couple years behind him, to just abandon them.
Right. Like that.
You know, I don't understand that. I don't get it.
It's just another level of trauma, you know, like one parent whose only attention paid to you is in beatings. And then the other parent who basically just says you don't exist and pieces out.
His sister, I think she lived a pretty normal life from what I understand. I don't know a lot about her or her history. I know that she did talk about a time when she found his bondage magazines and some of the things that he was building he was like a teenager, you know, she brought that up when he was being investigated by the police. She did talk about some of that. And she talked about the fact that he told her about a girl that he had tied to a tree and tortured her and allegedly killed her when he was like 17. That's never been proven. There's never been any corroborating evidence that that actually happened. I think that if you killed somebody, Mountain Air, New Mexico, which is where he lived, for those of you who don't know, I mean, there's probably 300 people that live there. It's not big.
Right.
So if he abducted a girl from that community and killed her, I think everybody would know.
Right.
Right?
I would think logically that makes sense. I mean, I think that there was a lot of sort of self-aggrandizing that went on with him. So and
even around there, there's really no, like, that's probably the biggest town within like a 50-mile radius of that area. Yeah.
Oh.
So everyone would know there, Jackie said. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I lived in Socorro. And there were, when I lived there, there were like 10,000 people there. And you couldn't even use a restroom without everybody knowing. So so it's probably 1,000 times worse there.
I would think so.
Yeah. So my friend George asked me what happened to Cindy Hindy. So she was in jail, in prison for a long time. She actually was just released last July.
Was she really?
Yeah.
Interesting. That missed my radar. Don't know how.
Yeah, so she's free and she's under the radar. She's laying low. Rightfully so. Yeah, rightfully so. But she was I think we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
About her pathology and why she decided to help him abduct women and hurt them.
Hyperstophilia. Yeah. She definitely
talk about that a little bit.
Sure, no problem. I didn't come on here expecting to be like...
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you in the spot. But
not at all. Hyperstophilia is basically the sexual attraction to people who are known to have committed crimes. And that can be as simple as like a teen girl being into a dude who's done a stint in juvie, right? I mean, like harmless, you know, petty theft kind of shit. It can go all the way up through, you know, Cindy Hindy. Unfortunately, basically, there are two types of hyperstophiliacs. There's a passive hyperstophiliac who is, for instance, the people who wanted to, like, marry Charles Manson or Richard Ramirez. Like, these people aren't getting out of jail. It's not, and they're going to be in prison for the rest of their lives, or they're even on death row or whatever. Like, there's no fear in it, but they want to be associated with it, and it gets them off, right, to be around this person who's committed violent acts. It's unfortunate, but, you know, the passive hyperstophiles tend to be in relationships with abusers, which, I mean, kind of goes hand in hand in the attraction to somebody who's done terrible things. But then on the other side of that, you have aggressive hyperstophiles. And these are people who basically are attracted to the same thing, except that they're willing to participate in order to add to, I guess, the sexual pleasure of the person that they're trying to seek acceptance from. Oof. Yeah, it's not great. And super gross. And, you know, the one we were talking about recently was Ghislaine Maxwell, who, you know, wanted to keep her, keep interest in her from Jeffrey Epstein. And so she was willing to offer up girls who were very similar to herself in a lot of ways, emotionally, at least. I don't know. I'm going to use the word tribute.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I mean, we all speak Mockingjay, right?
I think some people do. Okay. Just a reminder to those of you watching Facebook, I'm trying to monitor the comments. It's a little bit hard for me. So come over to getvocal.com. If you're on a computer, or download the Get Vocal app on your mobile device, you can watch me here. But I will mention some of these comments here. So hi, Tink Nelly Ann from Las Cruces. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Hi, Ashley. Hi, Elena. Thank you so much for watching and listening. If you guys want to participate, I will try to check these comments periodically, but it is a challenge for me. I have ADHD and I can't multitask. I'm sorry. I get so distracted and unable to focus. Kayline said, it's kind of difficult to hide when your name is Cindy Hindy. Yeah. I imagine that she changed her name. That's what I imagine.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably.
She probably doesn't live in New Mexico either.
I wouldn't bet so. I would say she probably beelined it for anywhere else. I mean, kind of AKA Carl Homolka, you know, like, hey, let's go live in the Bahamas for a minute and change my name to something else and get married and have kids, and because that's super news for everybody. Speaking of, guess who's up for parole this year? Paul Bernardo. Oh,
yay. It would just be really hard for her to not be seen, even if she was in Albuquerque. Like, Albuquerque is a, I want to say big city, but that's the wrong word. But there's, you know, there's about a million people that live in the metro area. So even then, I can't hide from people that I know in Albuquerque. You know, like, I'm going to run into them. So she would definitely, definitely have left the state, is my opinion. My friend George also asked if there's any cold cases in the area that can be contributed to David Parker Ray. And the answer to that is probably and maybe. And I don't know. So...
we may never.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of rumors that go around. A lot of people think that David Parker Ray may have been responsible for the disappearance of Tara Calico. I don't think that's true. I don't think that he was responsible for that. I think that it's more likely, and according to police records, it's quite apparent that there was a family member of the sheriff involved in Tara Calico's disappearance and probable murder. Do they know who some of those women were in those videos that he made? They were only able to identify Kelly Garrett, Kelly Van Cleve. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they were able to identify her was because of her tattoo.
Right.
If she hadn't had that tattoo, they wouldn't have known who she was. A lot of the women, their faces were covered, so they couldn't identify them based on what they look like. The biggest thing, I think, is if you know people in New Mexico that have gone missing, go to the FBI's website, search for David Parker Ray, and look at all of those trophies that he saved, because they might belong to somebody. I mean, I guarantee they belong to somebody, but they might belong to somebody you know.
Right. That's gruesome. Ugh. I wish that we could be more help outside of New Mexico. You know, I mean, it'd be a real long shot, I think, but.
Well, and unfortunately his victimology of the people that he picked, I mean, they were transients. They were, you know, people struggling with drug addiction. They were sex workers. They were people who wouldn't necessarily be missed.
Right.
You know,
the less dead.
It's heartbreaking because those people still had people who loved them.
Right. You know, it's frustrating, and I hope you don't mind my stepping in here and just putting this out there, but, you know, we hear all the time when someone is victimized, right? You know, that, like, oh, he was someone's son, he was someone's husband, he was someone's father, he was someone's friend, he was someone's this or that. Let's chop off the fat there and just say he was someone.
Yeah.
Like, that, you know what I mean? That's what it should end with. Right.
Absolutely. It's just not okay. And the way that, you know, I watching documentaries about this case and even hearing how law enforcement talk about Cynthia V. Hill, you know, to the point where they're like, well, she's a sex worker, so we need to really think about how credible her account is. And honestly, like, you picked her up from a neighbor of David Parker Ray's house, completely naked, with a metal dog collar around her neck and a giant chain attached to it. Why is she less credible than any other victim just because of the life that she's living?
Well, and that reminds me, you know, of the 14-year-old who escaped from Dahmer.
Yeah.
Who was found naked on the street, who couldn't communicate. He was Laotian and didn't speak very much English. And he was, you know, gently as possible, but he was bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And he was this underage child, and he was obviously traumatized and in the street and naked. And Dahmer came down and talked to the police and just said, like, oh, no, he's 19 and we're lovers and we just had an argument and, you know, whatever. And so they just escorted this kid back up to his apartment and he was strangled to death. I mean, it's just, can you not use, you know, like a person's profession or their race or whatever as a reason to consider them less than.
Right. Or less credible.
Right. I mean, this poor kid was terrified, you know, and I can't imagine that anybody, you know, in Cynthia's position or any of the other victims there that were, you know, trying to get people to understand and trying to, you know, I mean, it makes me think of Charles Albright as well. And all these women who are coming forward and saying, no, this guy's scary. This guy did this. He tried this with me and he did this to me and whatever. And they were just like, right, but you're a streetwalker. So,
you know, I think Cynthia V. Hill just for me is a personal hero because the amount of strength that she showed. Yeah. It happens all the time, Jackie. You're right. Nobody ever got away from him. She's the only one. She just blew my mind. Like you said, it was just mind-blowing listening to her talk about that. Yeah. I don't know. I'm at a loss right now for some reason. Yeah.
No, I don't blame you. You know, I mean, it's just such a... He thought of everything. He was so incredibly methodical and so incredibly deliberate. And say, thank God he was totally doing this. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank God for Cynthia V. Hill.
Yeah. I mean, oh my God.
Those lives are precious. You're right, Patty. You're right.
They are. Yeah. You know, it's astounding to me, you know, in so many things that I've watched and, you know, sex workers who have been interviewed and whatnot. And it's, you know, there was one that I watched and I wish I could remember the name of the host. It's been several years now, but he was just telling them, oh, actually it was, what's his name? Michael Phelps. There's an initial before it. He's a true crime writer and he did a series and out there talking with these women who were sex workers. He was just like, do you feel safe? Is everything okay? Is there anything I can do for you? I mean, because he just was like, his heart just went out to these women, you know? M. William Phelps. Thank you. That's it. Thank you, Alex. She's so clutch.
She's great.
But yeah, I just, it breaks my heart thinking that people look at these women and think that's where they wanted to end up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not okay to treat people like that in general. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah, everybody deserves dignity and respect. Yeah, just on a regular day, terrible things happen to women and men who are dealing with drug addiction, who are in the sex work industry, physical violence, all those things. I mean, the West Mesa bone collector, you know, not all of them were sex workers or drug addicts. Some of them were innocent young women who were abducted and murdered, but you know, those women as well, they were missing forever and nobody cared. Their family members were begging the police to do something and nobody did anything until their bodies were found. It's just, it's completely insane and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I don't think it made it into my episode with Cynthia. I don't remember if it did, but I asked her if she felt like she was cheated out of justice because he died. And her response was amazing. She said, no, I don't feel like I was cheated out of justice. She's like, I'm only grateful that he is no longer able to hurt anybody else. And so even though she didn't get the outcome that she wanted, he wasn't put away in jail and all of those things, she's so gracious about it. More than I would be, I think. I think I would have been very mad that he didn't serve any time for what he did. I was inspired by that. Better than I would have been able to handle it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, such a dignified and brave response. Absolutely. I mean, and it's the right response. At the end of the day, he can't hurt anybody else. So who cares if he died or who cares if he was in prison? The good news is nobody else can be hurt by him. I know that they dredged the lake in 2011. Is that the word? Dragged? Whatever.
One of the two.
It's one of those. They didn't find anything, but, you know, who knows?
Right. Who knows?
He was a state park ranger at Elephant Butte State Park. There's a lot of desert out there. There's caves out there dredged. Oh, so I guess I was right the first time. Thank you, Jackie. He could have hidden bodies anywhere. And his daughter even said that if he wasn't murdering them, he was selling them into trafficking. So it's just, the whole case is horrible. I'm glad that he's no longer able to hurt anybody. I'm so, so grateful to have been able to meet Cynthia Vigil Jaramillo. She still remains an amazing person, an incredible person. And I'm always going to be grateful for her for talking to me.
Oh, and for bringing justice to all of his other victims. I mean, what an incredible woman.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions? Does anybody want to jump on and chat with us? We've got about 15 minutes left. If you want to ask questions on Facebook, I'll take a quick peek and see what's going on there. Anything you guys want to know about David Parker Ray? Anything you want to know about True Consequences? Anything you want to know about Dos Pequeños?
I'll answer all of those.
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you.
Welcome. Always. Always.
Welcome to everybody who's just joined. A horrible chatter.
Oh, Luke is here.
Yeah.
Hi.
If you guys want to grab a spot, feel free.
Yeah, hop on.
So I know this was the case that you wanted to do with me, Ariel.
Well, except that I completely forgot the first case I ever listened to was this one. So, and you were like, this bitch doesn't listen.
I was like, I honestly was thinking, oh yeah, she keeps telling me how much she loves my show, but she's never even listened to it.
That's the thing. And then when you were like, hey, the name of my show, and I was like, I sound like an idiot.
It's one of my top pet cases. Yeah, me too. Definitely. Me too, Alex.
Definitely.
It's stuck with me for sure.
Aw, thanks, Kayline.
Oh, it's really nice. Amazing. Yeah,
I'd love to do a podcast with Eric.
We keep throwing an idea around, a couple of ideas around, but we haven't really pulled the trigger yet.
I mean, some of them are more realistic than others. The very first one we came up with collectively was going to be Eric and Ariel's Disney reviews.
And then I think there was a sing-talking one that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we were just going to sing our way through an entire episode.
Nobody wants that.
No.
Yeah, this case for me has stuck with me. And it stuck with me so much that I did name my show after Truth or Consequences. Yeah. Please stop encouraging this idea. Thanks, Kayline. But one of the things that frustrates me is the misinformation that's out there about David Parker Ray and about this case.
Definitely.
That just drives me nuts. Not that I'm perfect, because I have made mistakes and I do make mistakes, but I don't know. I think part of it is because I grew up so close. Like, my hometown is about 60 or 70 miles away from Truth or Consequences. It is harmful to any case to give misinformation. Mm-hmm. And so when all this was happening in 1999, I had just graduated from high school. So I clearly remember all of it. And I remember how freaked out everybody was. And anybody who lived in New Mexico probably remembers how scary that was, because for such a long time in New Mexico, I feel like we were very sheltered. These were the things, you know, serial killers, serial rapes. These were the kinds of things that happened in New York, in LA, in Seattle, even in Dallas. We never really had anything this high profile like what happened in Elephant Butte. It shook us all. We all lost the idea that New Mexico was sheltered from all of that. And the worst part about it, I think, and the betrayal that a lot of the residents in the state felt, was that it happened for so many decades without him being caught. Was he well known in his town? He was well known. Yeah. Well, Elephant Butte is pretty small. So his neighbors knew him. He worked for Elephant Butte State Park. All of the park rangers talked highly about him. He was known as soft-spoken and friendly and engaging and charismatic. Everybody said that he was such a nice guy, which is what they always say about serial killers.
Right.
So watch out for your nice guy friends, because you never know.
Look, I've said it on my show. I can't repeat it enough. No one is beyond suspicion.
Yeah.
Nobody. You know, and the fact is that if you've got somebody that has not even so much as a traffic ticket on their record, and they're like a youth pastor, and they're, you know, like a Boy Scout leader, and they do Little League, mm-hmm. and they're whatever, all of this shit, right? That you just look at them and you go, wow, he's the greatest guy ever. Could there be some compensation there? Could this be a matter of grooming a community to make them think like this person's beyond reproach so that they don't have to be as careful? I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes down to when, you know, for instance, allegations are made against somebody and it's like, oh, that's the last person you'd suspect. Mm-hmm. Well, that may be the person that you need to go, oh shit, rather than, oh no, there's no way. You know what I mean? Right. Like it should maybe be your first reaction. That's like, okay, well, I didn't see it, you know?
Yeah. Jackie said that it was a loss of innocence. It really was a loss of innocence for New Mexico. Again, you know.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Yes.
Okay.
Hear you perfectly.
Well, I figured out between your live stream and moving over to here, I figured out how to turn my phone into a camera while also using my microphone.
Oh. Look at you go.
But I wanted to.
Nice.
You're a wizard.
I've never heard your show, and it's called True Consequences, and that is the close to the name of the town of the David Parker Ray crimes.
Yep.
Is your show just about that?
It's just about New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
You know what?
Go ahead.
Eric, we could do a limited
podcast. A serial?
Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could.
On this one. It's fascinating to me.
I'd be interested in that. For sure.
All right, we'll talk later.
Okay. Could I delve into the bone collector? Could we delve into the bone collector? Yeah, we could. We could do that. We could do a couple. Maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's a thing. We go deep dives into famous cases.
We'll need to figure out a name so we can put it all under one heading and make it like season by season, yeah, with different cases.
Yeah. All right. We'll workshop
it. I'm here for it. We'll workshop it. It's good.
I work for a living is my line. Sorry, I work for a living. That's a good one. It's a good line. All right. Any other questions? We've got about 5 minutes left. Is anybody
anything?
Anybody who's not from New Mexico, my panelists here, just don't give up on True Consequences and Dos Pequeños. Do not worry, Jackie. These shows are here to stay. As long as I'm around and Alex is around. I am very, very, very proud and happy to announce that True Consequences was mentioned in New Mexico, the magazine. That was pretty incredible today to read that and to see that. And then New Mexico, the magazine shared what I posted on Instagram on their story, which was really cool. So
I did. That's wonderful. Yeah. I'm so excited. Yay.
Very nice.
Oh, thank you guys.
That's so great. Oh,
yeah.
I love it so much.
Well, you know, I started the show just thinking, yeah, I'm trying to drive change in the state. Exactly, Jackie. That's exactly why I started it. And to get the response that I've gotten and to be embraced by the community, it's just overwhelming. I can't thank my listeners enough. You guys are incredible. I love you so much.
You're welcome.
You don't listen.
I do.
I'm just so grateful for all of you. I can't thank you enough. And, you know, I had to revisit this case because it is, anyway, I'm just so grateful for all of you. I'm so grateful for this show. I'm grateful for what's come out of it. And I have some exciting things that I can't share right now, but I want to share, that are coming up in the future. So be on the lookout for those things, but True Consequences is driving change and it's really starting to take hold. And I'm very, very excited about that. What's next for True Consequences? Season 3 is coming probably in the fall. I want to get through those pequeños. Once we're done with that, I really want to do more interviews, and I'm hoping that coronavirus participates and calms down so that I can start doing interviews again, because I miss doing those. That is the crux of what I want to do. I want to give the voice to victims' families, to people who have unsolved cases, so that we can get more awareness for them. And coronavirus really put a damper on that for season 2.
Yeah. You
know. So, just a couple things. If you know anybody who would like to tell their story and they're based in New Mexico, please send them my way. I am so, so willing to do that for them. It's so important to me. And if my entire season 3 could be that, I would be very happy. So otherwise, if you have not listened to Dos Pequeños yet, I'm going to keep talking about it. I'm really proud of it. It's fun. It's a lighter side of me. It's a little bit more cheeky. That's a good word. Than True Consequences is. And I'm very happy to bring that to you guys. Let me see if I have any more questions. Does La Llorona live in Maryland? Because I live near a river. I don't know. Maybe. Don't go hang out by the water at night, because she might get you and drown you. Especially if
La Llorona is not here for your shit.
She will kill you. Mm-hmm. Especially if you misbehave. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Maybe Cindy Hindi lives in Maryland. Maybe. Who knows? She's from the Pacific Northwest originally, so I think it's probably likely she went back there with her family. So I love all of you. Thank you for listening.
We love you too.
And stay safe, New Mexico.
Thanks again for listening to True Consequences. Follow us on social media. On Instagram and Facebook at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is hosted, written, and produced by me, your host, Eric Carter Landine. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.